This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
And now, your daily dose of debate, breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, a great nation that has some pretty great economic figures. If you look at income, at employment, on making progress against poverty, then why is it that so many Americans feel the opposite? That we're actually moving in the wrong direction. There's a new book. It's a sweeping new book that's a great deal of the history of the last 100 years, frankly. And the book is called Ours Was the Shining Future, The Story of the American Dream. It's already an Amazon bestseller. The author joins us. His name is David Leonard. I'm pleased to say he's been on the show before. He is a Washington bureau chief, a writer for the New York Times, a senior writer for the New York Times, and a Pulitzer Prize winner. The information about his first book, which is called Ours with a Shining Future, The Story of the American Dream, is posted on our website. And what it's about, basically, is the betrayal and the abandonment of the working class in this country by so many forces that seem to run this society. David, congratulations on the book. And before we get into some of the essence of what you're writing about, one of the questions that I know that you answer in the book is, what the heck is wrong with the House Republicans? Why are they so dysfunctional? I mean, this is going on right now. They're voting to see if they can coalesce around Tom Emmer as Speaker. Why are they having such a difficult time, and what does that have to do with the death of the American dream?
Yeah. They have a narrow majority, so it's not easy for them to agree on a leader. But I think that's really not the main part of the story there. I mean, the main part, because we've had narrow majorities before, we've never had a caucus, Republican or Democrat, be unable to elect their own leader. We're told not to use the word unprecedented at the New York Times, unless you can really justify it. This is unprecedented. And this involves a lot of things. I mean, I think most of all, it involves the radicalization of the Republican Party, particularly on process grounds. I'm not saying the Republican Party is radical on all policy questions. On some policy questions, the Republican Party is closer to public opinion than the Democratic Party. But on policy grounds, you don't see Democrats trying to flip an election that they lost. You don't see Democrats unable to elect a party leader for themselves. And so this in part stems, I want to be clear, this is not the only explanation for it, but it really does stem from a large portion of our country that is extremely frustrated and angry with politics as usual. And while I really abhor some of the forms that that frustration and anger take, like a dysfunctional house, I think a lot of the frustration that voters feel, I understand where it comes from. When you look at whether it's income over recent decades, which for everyone but the affluent has trailed behind economic growth, or net worth, which actually hasn't risen for the typical American family in the 21st century once you adjust for inflation, or maybe most damningly, life expectancy. In 1980, Michael, we had a normal life expectancy for a high-income country. Today we have the lowest life expectancy of any high-income country, lower than Western Europe, Japan, South Korea, Canada, even lower than some non-rich countries like China and Chile and Slovenia.
And by the way, one of the things, and this is very, was shocking to me, I was researching a piece that I was writing, and the UN numbers for the life expectancy for the Palestinian Authority, which includes the numbers for Gaza, right? The life expectancy is very close to that of the United States of America. It's 74 years.
Yeah. I hadn't even looked at that, right? So it's not higher, but that is another remarkable example of this. So there's something in our economy and our society that's not working, and the House involves a lot of things. But when I see political dysfunction in this country, and I see other countries more willing to challenge us on the global stage, I really do think an important part of the story is our own internal weakness.
Okay, you use the term the American dream, and you actually go through some of the history of that term. Why is it that we have that distinctive idea, but people don't really talk about the French dream, or the Spanish dream, or the Canadian dream, even? Why have we been unique in that regard?
So in 1931, a historian named James Truslow Adams, who had won a Pulitzer Prize for his earlier book, and then he wrote a bestseller in 1931 called The Epic of America. And I love this story, and I tell it in more detail in the book, because think about 1931. It's the Depression. He's probably writing the book in 1930. Things are terrible in this country. And yet he says that the United States' most important contribution to world culture is this idea of the American dream, a term he coins. If you look in newspapers before him, you sometimes see American before dream almost kind of accidentally as part of normal speech. But the idea of the American dream, as Adams coins the term, and he defines it as a better, richer, happier life for all our citizens of every rank. We today would recognize that as something like upward mobility, right? It's the idea that even if you're born poor, if you come from a working class family, you can have your life improve. You can expect it. It's normal, better, richer, happier life. And the fact that he was able to coin that idea during the Depression, to me, captured what has long been a distinctly American version of optimism. And in the decades after he coined the phrase, it was reality. We saw incomes surge in this country. We saw the creation of the largest middle class in history. We saw incomes for poor and middle class people rise even faster than incomes for rich people. I mean, today it's like that. It seems like that defies the law of gravity, but it doesn't. We saw the black-white wage gap shrink in these decades. And so it really is possible in this country. I still think it's possible today to build an economy that makes the American dream real. It's just not the economy we have.
Okay, you're famous for having researched and come up with one of the most stunning statistics that indicates the problems with the American dream today, which is the idea that a person born in 1940 had a 92% chance of out-earning their parents, whereas a millennial still has a chance, but it's a 50-50 chance. Why has that certainty of progress, of intergenerational progress, of upward mobility, why has that one-time certainty become now an iffy proposition?
I should just say, in to give credit where it's due, I came up with the idea of asking that question and trying to answer it. I do not have the ability to answer it. It was a group of economists who, when I encouraged them to look into it, did so, and they did the research. I tell that story also in the book. And you're asking why? What are the key reasons that's happening, Michael? Am I right?
Absolutely.
Look, there are many things going on. The United States was never going to be as dominant on the global stage as it was in the 50s and 60s. In the 50s and 60s, Europe and Japan, certainly the 50s, were still recovering from war. China and the Soviet Union were communists. They really couldn't compete on the world stage. Much of the Southern Hemisphere was still emerging from colonialism. So I'm not suggesting the United States can go back to the dominance it had back then. However, our economy had a set of features that would still work in a modern economy.
We will get to those features in just a moment. I'm speaking to David Leonhardt of the New York Times. He is talking about reviving the American dream. His new book is called Ours Was the Shining Future, The Story of the American Dream, posted at our website. We'll be right back.
The Michael Medved Show.
why be held back by pain and difficulty and soreness and stiffness when Relief Factor is available and available so readily? You have nothing to lose but your pain and the whole world to gain. It's just $19.95 for a three-week quick start, which can reduce the inflammation, it can reduce the pain, it can reduce the soreness and stiffness and make you feel better. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for Relief Factor, michaelmedved.com, find the banner for Relief Factor. If you're troubled by Washington moving toward more government control, income taxes, rent control, and centralized decision-making, now is the time for you to take action. At Washington Policy Center, we want free market reforms that make Washington the best place to raise a family, to get a job, or to start a business. WPC is nationally renowned for its effectiveness in an ideologically hostile state. Get off the sidelines. Become a member today at WashingtonPolicy.org. That's WashingtonPolicy.org.
Well, just when you thought it couldn't get any better, MyPillow is launching the MyPillow 2.0. Back when MyPillow was invented, it had everything you could want in a pillow. Now, nearly two decades later, they've discovered a new technology that makes MyPillow even better. The MyPillow 2.0 has the patented adjustable fill of the original MyPillow, and now with brand new fabric that is made with a temperature-regulating thread. The MyPillow 2.0 is the softest, smoothest, and coolest pillow you'll ever own. Say goodbye to tossing and turning and flipping your pillow over in the middle of the night, and more great news on the MyPillow 2.0, buy one, get one free with promo code MEDVED. MyPillow 2.0 with its temperature regulating technology is 100% made in the USA and comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Just go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio podcast square to receive the MyPillow 2.0 buy one, get one free offer. Just when you thought MyPillow couldn't get any better, MyPillow 2.0 gives you the best pillow ever. Enter promo code MEDVED at MyPillow.com to get your MyPillow 2.0s today.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs Generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs Generator and Lung Delivery System at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
There's a piece today by David Leonhard in the New York Times under the heading Reviving the American Dream that's part of his new book, which is sweeping, it's highly readable, it's tremendously important. The book is called Ours Was the Shining Future, the story of the American Dream. And we're talking right now about what happened to the American dream. Why, for instance, the idea of upward mobility, the idea of every given family in America had the assumption that it was going to be better for the next generation. That's not true anymore. I mean, the polling shows that it is not. The material in the book shows that it is not. So the question is, how do we get that back? Or is it worth even pursuing that notion of always moving up an economic ladder? Partially that moving up an economic ladder means moving up an educational ladder, which was also part of the American dream. David Leonhardt is a senior writer for the New York Times. He does the morning section of the New York Times, the posting on the web of material that comes out even before the newspaper does. Okay, in terms of the American dream of progress, mobility, more opportunity, what's gone wrong and how do we fix it?
Well, look, capitalism is the most successful system ever found for lifting living standards. But only some kinds of capitalism work really well. Capitalism also has these excesses. Over time, the rich tend to get richer. They can accumulate more power. They can use the capital they have to earn a higher return than people who don't have capital, as the economist Thomas Piketty has explained in his work. Free market capitalism also tends not to invest enough in things like scientific research, because imagine you're a car company and there's some kind of research that might really help the future, but you're not sure. It might undercut your own business. You might not do that research. And so I think the kind of capitalism that has worked the best we've seen over generations is what I call democratic capitalism with a small d. Some other people call it managed capitalism, which to me is less elegant than democratic capitalism. But it's a form of capitalism in which the government does invest in the future. It builds roads and it builds schools and it makes investments in scientific research, as Dwight Eisenhower did. He increased that kind of spending more than any other 20th century president, and he really was pretty conservative in a lot of ways. In democratic capitalism, the government makes sure that people can join unions, which I think are vital. In democratic capitalism, the government does maintain a trade policy that isn't just a free trade policy. And I think when you have a capitalism like that, it also affects the culture. I mean, one of the things that I was really struck by is I don't think the corporate executives of the mid-20th century were better human beings than our corporate executives today. But they really did behave in ways that were more patriotic and were less selfish than current executives do. And I think that's because they existed in a culture where it was seen as obscene to make too much more money than anyone else at your company. And it was seen that, you know, you really did have some responsibility to your community. And I still think a version of capitalism like that is possible today, even if we're a long way away from it.
You talk about Dwight Eisenhower. I mean, one of the things that's striking about the Eisenhower administration is there were 3 years in a row where we had a balanced budget. Okay, that's, and this again was not playing games as we did with the surplus that existed very briefly under Bill Clinton. This was a genuine balanced budget while we were building federal highways and improving education and moving forward. What do we do? Because we can't bring back President Eisenhower. What do we do to bring back some of the achievements that were made here in America after the war?
Well, I think one of the things to think about is liberals and conservatives are always going to disagree about how big government should be, and that we should have that. Right? That's one of the great benefits of the two-party system. We have competing ideas, and there's nothing wrong with that. What I would ask both liberals and conservatives to do is, however large you think government should be, don't think only about that question. Also think about the question of how oriented the government is toward the future versus the present. And one of the things that alarms me is that over recent decades, we have shrunk the parts of the government that are oriented toward the future. Medicare and Social Security are wonderful programs, but they are not oriented toward the future. They're oriented toward the present. And when you look at what's happened to our government, the parts oriented toward the future, things like investment, things like education, things like infrastructure, those have become a shrinking part of the economy, whereas things that are spending money for now have become a growing part of our government. And so within both the conservative and liberal parts of our country, I would hope each could say, boy, how is it that we can make sure that however large government should be, it's not just focused on the present, but it's also focused on the things that will create prosperity for the future. And that sometimes if government doesn't do them, nobody will do them.
Which countries right now do you think get that balance between present and future better than the United States of America?
Well, I think, I mean, Michael, in that question is an important point, which is it's not like any country out there is getting everything right. I really do think there are signs that we're getting it more wrong than most. You know, I mentioned the life expectancy statistics. The United States has the worst life expectancy of any rich country, and that didn't used to be the case. However, on this question of oriented toward the future, it's more a question of, is there anyone doing as badly as we are? And there may well be, but when you look at the analyses of how much of government spending goes to children versus the elderly, we are an outlier in how much of our government money we put toward the elderly rather than children. We put
relatively. Is that because the elderly have more political power than kids who are 3 and 4 and 5?
I think that's a big part of it, but of course that should be true in Europe as well, right? And they do a better job of focusing on the future. I think part of it is we've ended up with this sort of slightly odd situation in the United States in which we have programs that look a lot like socialism for the elderly, and I know many people would object to that, but Medicare and Social Security are they're not that far from socialism. They're certainly a form of capitalism with heavy government involvement. But of course we don't have anything like that for children. So we really look more like a European welfare state for people over 65 and not for people under 18. So part of it is that, and part of it is also we've just done a poorer job investing in all kinds of things. I mean, I just had this excerpt of the book run in the New York Times Magazine. Think about how long it takes to cross the country today. It's sort of shocking. You could do it more quickly in the 1970s than you could today, whereas you go to other countries and it's faster to get around than it used to be.
A pleasure speaking to David Leonhard. I hope we can continue the conversation. His brand new book, his first book, Ours Was the Shining Future, The Story of the American Dream. It's posted at our website at michaelmedved.com. We will be back talking about a rise of anti-Semitism in the United States, the ongoing battle for a Speaker of the House, and much more right here on the MedVed Show.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
USA News Update. The U.S. issuing a warning to Iran, urging them not to escalate the conflict between Israel and Hamas.
Iran has supported Hamas and other groups that continue to carry out attacks on Israel. Iranian leaders have routinely threatened to wipe Israel off the map.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken telling the UN Security Council that the U.S. will respond firmly if Iran or its proxies carry out attacks on U.S. personnel in the Middle East. The House may vote today to select a new speaker. Minnesota Congressman Tom Emmer has emerged as the Republican nominee following five rounds of closed-door balloting. Elon Musk is expressing the belief that a potential World War III is possible. In a discussion on his social media platform X, the billionaire pointed to the conflicts between Israel and Hamas, as well as Russia's ongoing involvement in Ukraine, as factors contributing to his concern. John Schaefer, USA News.
Hey y'all, Jeff Foxworthy here. Now if you've ever found yourself repeating the same thing over and over for 75 years, you might be Smokey Bear.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
That's why I'm filling in for Smokey to switch things up, because there's a lot more to say. And I should know, because my grandfather was a firefighter. And one of the things he taught me is that the people that love the outdoors the most are often the ones accidentally starting wildfires, which means always BYOB. No, bring your own bucket to the campfire. And be extra careful with things like burning yard trimmings. Don't just walk away, or chances are you might be starting a wildfire. So for the love of the outdoors, go to SmokeyBear.com to learn more about wildfire prevention. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
This is an urgent warning. America is heading for another major financial disaster at an alarming rate. We could see stock prices fall as much as 50%, but this time the crash could be more violent and come faster than you ever imagined. We are Advantage Gold, America's most trusted precious metals company, and we are here to sound the alarm that winter is coming for investors. And now is the time to take actions that may help protect and secure your portfolio with physical precious metals. Want to help protect your hard-earned money before it's too late? Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000 and request our free gold and silver survival kit today. Mention that you heard us on the radio and learn how you could get up to $1,000 in free silver coins. The number is 800-900-8000. Call now to get your free survival kit and see if you qualify for $1,000 in free silver today.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Check with your financial advisor before investing.
Call 800-900-8000.
Medved Show.
And on the Michael Medved Show, Jeremy Steiner, pride of Hillsdale College, my longtime producer on this show, came up with an incredibly important question, which is, he took a look at a headline. The headline says, anti-Semitism on the rise following early October attacks in Israel. In other words, and he asks a question, how does that headline make any sense? Anti-Semitism on the rise because there have been attacks against Israeli that could be called anti-Semitism? We will be talking about that with Mark Oppenheimer of Yale University coming up on the Michael Medved Show. First up, at the UN today, the Secretary of State, who is, I think, winning wider and wider international respect, the guy is articulate and forceful and effective. He said this at the UN, and it is not recorded whether the representatives of the Islamic state of Iran were actually paying the attention, but that they should, but they certainly should. This is Secretary Blinken at the UN.
It is no secret to anyone in this room or on this council that for years Iran has supported Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis, and other groups that continue to carry out attacks on Israel. Iranian leaders have routinely threatened to wipe Israel off the map. In recent weeks, Iran's proxies have repeatedly attacked U.S. personnel in Iraq and Syria, whose mission is to prevent ISIS from renewing its rampage. So, let me say this before this council, and let me say what we've consistently said to Iranian officials through other channels. the United States does not seek conflict with Iran. We do not want this war to widen. But if Iran or its proxies attack U.S. personnel anywhere, make no mistake, we will defend our people, we will defend our security swiftly and decisively.
And then he addresses the other countries in the Security Council of the United Nations, and basically suggesting that they can have a role in preventing this conflict from spreading. This is Secretary Antony Blinken speaking this morning at the United Nations.
To all the members of this council, if you, like the United States, want to prevent this conflict from spreading, tell Iran, tell its proxies, in public, in private, through every means, do not open another front against Israel in this conflict. Do not attack Israel's partners.
Okay, and then he spoke about the hostages, with the release of two more hostages, both elderly women, 185, 179, some of whom talked about the fact that they were treated better than they had expected, but they were still drawn through a hell of a network of underground facilities, one of them beaten with a crowbar. And again, elderly women, this is Secretary Blinken talking about the release of a total of four hostages, two Americans, two Israelis. But there are many, many more. This is clip 16.
The value we place on civilian life is the driving force behind our efforts to secure the release of hostages held by Hamas and other terrorist groups in Gaza. I, as others have, had the occasion to meet with families of those missing and suspected to be in the hands of Hamas on my recent trip. Several, as you know, are in this room with us today. None of us can imagine the nightmare they're living, something no family should have to endure. Their loved ones must be released immediately, unconditionally, and every member of this council, indeed, every member of this body, should insist on that, insist on that, insist on that.
And insisting on that means that you also have to have a longer-term view of what is required in this ongoing battle that is going on right now in the Middle East. And one of the points that is made is, the question people ask is, what are they fighting for? And there's an important piece in the Wall Street Journal by Jerome M. Marcus, who is a lawyer in Philadelphia, and he's a fellow at George Mason University Center for the Middle East and International Law. And the headline is, Israel Needs Unconditional Surrender. Why and what does that mean? He writes, Israel needs to declare the precise goals of its Gaza campaign for its own citizens and soldiers, and to establish the credibility of its efforts in the world's eyes. The destruction of Hamas, the word destruction in quotes, has no meaning in international law and is too vague for Israelis being asked to sacrifice everything. History provides an example of what Israel should do. At the end of World War II, the Allies' goal was clear. The German Third Reich must agree to an unconditional surrender. The Allies' demand of Germany should be the model for Israel now. Hamas's war crimes are equal in depravity to those of the Nazis. Their magnitude is far less only because Jews now have a fortified homeland and an Israeli army. Hamas and the Nazis also shared the goal of Jewish genocide. Following the Allies' example, Israel should announce that it will obtain Hamas's unconditional surrender. In 1945, in the presence of representatives of the Allied powers, German high command officials signed military surrender documents. The Reims account in France on May 7th and the act of military surrender in Berlin on May 9th. The documents require German soldiers to cease military operations, The Allies' control of German territory enabled them to enforce that order, which they did. And this continues. Israel, argues Marcus, should follow in the Allies' footsteps. It must demand unconditional surrender. It must capture and, at least in the war's immediate aftermath, take complete control of Gaza. It must crush Hamas, killing or capturing its top leaders. Israel must announce that it will try Hamas's leaders in courts that it convenes for the trial of war crimes, similar to the Jerusalem District Court's 1961-62 trial of Adolf Eichmann, a Nazi official who played a central role in implementing Hitler's final solution. If found guilty, argues Jerome Marcus, if found guilty, defendants must be executed. And Israel must carry out those sentences. Israeli law provides for the death penalty in cases involving genocide or Nazi collaboration, and Eichmann is the only prisoner the State of Israel has ever executed. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has already made it clear that Israel has no desire to govern those who live in the Gaza Strip. Israel has a 75-year history of improvising brilliantly as it goes, but clarifying and announcing its plans now for Gaza's future will promote the legitimacy of Israel's actions and help it garner support for the steps it must take to secure peace. History teaches us what Israel needs to do. Republicans have... Oh, my. Tom Emmer withdraws from the House Speaker race hours after winning the GOP nomination. We will get to that. We'll also be speaking to Mark Oppenheimer about the rise of anti-Semitism in the United States. Why, when Israel is under attack? We'll be right back on the Mendez Show. Why be held back by pain and difficulty and soreness and stiffness when Relief Factor is available and available so readily? You have nothing to lose but your pain and the whole world to gain. It's just $19.95 for a three-week quick start, which can reduce the inflammation, it can reduce the pain, it can reduce the soreness and stiffness and make you feel better. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for Relief Factor, michaelmedved.com, find the banner for Relief Factor. If you're troubled by Washington moving toward more government control, income taxes, rent control, and centralized decision-making, now is the time for you to take action. At Washington Policy Center, we want free market reforms that make Washington the best place to raise a family, to get a job, or to start a business. WPC is nationally renowned for its effectiveness in an ideologically hostile state. Get off the sidelines. Become a member today at WashingtonPolicy.org. That's WashingtonPolicy.org. Instability, vulnerability, uncertainty, volatility, precarious, unpredictable. Now, all of those words describe our banking system right now, as evidenced by the recent collapse of major banks. Michael Medved here for Amfed Coin and Bullion. This was the second largest bank failure in history, and the Federal Reserve has been scrambling to keep this bank run from spreading. Now, if you feel uneasy about having too much money sitting in the bank, you're not alone. Gold, silver, and platinum have had recent gains as investors look for safe places to park their money. Now more than ever, you need to call my good friends Nick Grovich and Company, owner of Amfed Coin and Bullion. I've been doing business with Nick for many years, and I wouldn't go anywhere else. Nick and his team of specialists will provide you with personalized attention, honest information, and sound advice. If you're interested in buying or selling, call Amfed Coin and Bullion, 800-221-7694, 800-221-7694, AmericanFederal.com.
I had no idea it would destroy my life, but before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days' worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.
It's obvious. The unthinkable is happening. With all the recent media distractions, most folks never saw it coming. But a few did. Their guts told them something very wrong was going on. And now the headlines are proving them right. The people in charge keep telling you that everything's fine and to stop noticing. But you know better. Folks are investing in emergency food storage. And you should, too. My Patriot Supply, the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, are the ones you can trust. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling three-month emergency food kits. Each contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one for each family member. My Patriot Supply also sells biomass stoves, off-grid room heaters for when the power goes out, gravity-powered water filters, heirloom seeds, and survival gear that may come in handy soon. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com today. It's time to prepare for what's coming. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Mark Oppenheimer teaches English at Yale. He is the director of the Yale Journalism Initiative. His work has appeared frequently in the New York Times and around the world. He has also just been appointed by the American Jewish University, announced the appointment of Mark Oppenheimer as vice president of Open Learning. He is also the author of the book Squirrel Hill, The Tree of Life Synagogue Shooting, and The Soul of a Neighborhood. Mark, I appreciate your coming on the show. And it is a moment of increased anti-Semitism around the world, but particularly here in the United States. As CNN reports that 2022 last year saw the highest rate of recorded anti-Semitic incidents in the U.S. And then there was a question that was raised by my producer looking at a headline. Headline says, anti-Semitism on the rise following early October attacks in Israel. How does it make it sense that anti-Semitism should rise when Jews are attacked by some of the most diabolical, despicable, and degenerate terrorists in history?
Right. Well, I would agree with that characterization of these acts as terrorists. I think you and I are on the same page there. I don't think we, first of all, it doesn't make sense the way you put it. If I can be a little bit contrary, I don't think we know that anti-Semitism has shot up in America in the past couple weeks. What we know is that a lot of people have said a lot of anti-Semitic things and stupid things and have gotten attention for it. We know that whenever there's war or conflict or strife in the Middle East, or indeed whenever the Middle East or Israel is in the news, it gives oxygen to anti-Semites who are probably always there, and their petitions get signatures and then make the news, when in normal times they wouldn't necessarily make the news. So that doesn't mean that we're wrong to be terrified or concerned. We can lapse into a kind of sleepwalking state of ignorance or naivete in times when the Jewish state is not in the news. And then it gets into the news, and all of a sudden, lots of people, including anti-Semites, all of a sudden have these platforms because they're sought out for their opinions on the Middle East, or their statements get coverage, and things all of a sudden look terribly bad. I'm not sure that means that they go away in times of peace. They don't. They're there. and they're muttering to each other over dinner, and they're exchanging emails in chat rooms, and we're just not paying as much attention and not noticing because we have better things to do, like lead happy, productive lives, and often, if we're Jews, Jewish lives.
Okay, and basically, do you think that there has been an overreaction? There was a piece we covered on the air yesterday about Jewish schools. My two daughters both work at Jewish schools, and they apparently have been securing much greater security protection due to some of the threats and some of the insecurities surrounding the conflict in the Middle East. Do you think there's been an overreaction in terms of these worries about public safety for Jewish kids?
Well, look, I want to be very – so as somebody who is the dad of students in Jewish day school, who has sent children to Jewish summer camps, who has sent children on organized trips to Israel, I mean, I am very much in the thick of the community of people whose children could be perceived to be in harm's way because of anti-Semites. So I get this. I am not trivializing it. As you know, I also wrote a book about the murder of 11 Jews in Pittsburgh. I am not somebody – whose head is in the sand about this. That said, if we're either underreacting or overreacting, we are surely slightly overreacting. The fact remains that the United States is still an extraordinarily safe place, physically speaking, to be Jewish. I think there are people who are in spaces that don't feel emotionally safe. But physically speaking, the United States is about the safest place in the world to be Jewish right now, or pretty close to it. And, you know, based on all the best knowledge we have, there are not many credible threats to our physical safety right now. And I think, and I'll say one more thing about securitization and security, which is that I'm fairly dubious that we have a strong sense of what works or what doesn't work. It is certainly the case that there will be physical attacks on Jews in the future and murders of Jews for anti-Semitic reasons in the United States someday again. If the United States is here another year or 1,000 years, it'll happen sometime in the next millennia, right? We know it will. The odds are it will. But that we know what could prevent it or what security measures could stop some sort of sick, murderous anti-Semite, I'm not sure that we do.
In terms of the ideals on college campuses, and I've been following the situation at Yale, my alma mater, yours, where mm-hmm. you teach, there have been, particularly for elite college campuses, Columbia, Penn, Harvard, what has gone wrong? What should be handled differently, do you suspect, to prevent some of the statements by organizations? Harvard is most notorious, where they say that the Israeli regime is entirely responsible for the violence in the Middle
right.
East. How do we improve that situation?
Yeah, well, first, let me offer a small correction. I retired from Yale 2 Junes ago, so about 16 months ago. But I just want to be clear, because I have a successor who's doing a great job running the journalism initiative, and I want to be clear, but I did teach there for 15 years, and you're right, it's your alma mater and mine. I also have looked at what's going on at Harvard, Columbia, Penn, other schools. There's a lot we don't. I'm concerned about any time people make stupid, callous, or anti-Semitic statements. I take them seriously. At Harvard, we have no idea how many students were represented by that coalition of 30 organizations, which included affinity groups at the dental school and other places. We have no idea how many people that letter spoke for. It certainly spoke for at least 50 or 100, but it may not have spoken for 500, you know, on a campus of 15 or 20,000. So we just don't know. We see these letters. They were put together by somebody. They got organizations to sign on. Does that mean that there were 50 people in the room or 100 or 200? It probably doesn't. Now, so the odds that if you're at a lunch in Harvard Square sitting next to a fellow student that they had any part in an anti-Semitic or anti-Israel letter might be trivially small. should we still be concerned when people react to the murders of Israeli babies with callous indifference? Of course we should. I think there's tremendous ignorance on college campuses. I think it's fashionable to take certain positions right now that often are at odds with Israelis or Jews or both. I hope you would join me in speaking to the broader breakdown in interest in history and the humanities and world events. These schools are increasingly schools of highly careerist STEM majors, math, science, business, economics majors, who know close to nothing about world history, if they ever did. And so I think if you want to say what's going wrong on campuses, a lot is going wrong on campuses, which impinges on the questions you're talking about in Israel, but it doesn't begin or end with them.
Yeah, and a lot of what's going wrong also is the version of American history that is received.
Yeah, but Michael, a trivial number of Americans, of college students at Harvard will take an American history class. I mean, you're right, but this discourse still tends to kind of live in this la-la land that I would love to live in as a humanist, as a history major, in which history is this thing being debated. History is not being debated. They are taking computer science and engineering and biomechanical engineering. They are looking to start computer startups. History is not of interest to your average undergraduate at all, left-wing, right-wing, whatever.
And again, which does leave a general misunderstanding about, that leads Americans to feel guilty rather than grateful for this country and everything that particularly as Jews that this country has given us. Mark Oppenheimer, our guest, his book on Squirrel Hill, The Tree of Life Synagogue Shooting and Soul of a Neighborhood, was a bestseller. It is posted up at our website at michaelmedved.com. And Mark is the newly appointed vice president of open learning at the American Jewish University, formerly teacher of English and the Journalism Initiative at Yale. When we come back, we'll be speaking with Jonathan Allen of NBC about the ongoing confusion in the House of Representatives and the failure to find a speaker. New developments coming up in This Greatest Nation on God's Green Earth.
Hey, want to feel young again? Are you tired, run down, have aches and pains, brain fog? This is science-based, not hype or fancy marketing. It really works. Carbon 60 helps detoxify your body on the cellular level. It stabilizes free radicals, just like the antioxidants found in red wine and berry stew, but on a far smaller, more bioavailable nanoscale. It's like a bottle of electrons, helping your body to function better. You can also apply it on your skin, topically, over muscles, joints, or organs. Most people feel results within minutes. This is not a drug. It's organic carbon. Feel better today. About 95% of our users report more energy and clarity of mind within 10 days. Give us a call at Gruska's Carbon 60 at 720-600-6040 or visit our site at c-60.com. Call 720-600-6040. And feel young again.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.